Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson, and this is Miss Into Podcast.
The Kelly Clarkson Fan Podcast, talking all things Kelly and to you.
Here is Jeremy and Pam.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of Miss Into Podcast, the Kelly Clarkson Fan Podcast. My name is Pam.
And I'm Jeremy. It's so good to see you guys, even though we can't actually see you. But we are excited because we are returning with our series tour breakdown, where we talk about one of Kelly Clarkson's many concert tours. Although this is unlike our album breakdown series, where we're going in order of the album's releases, we are bouncing around a bit with our tour breakdowns. And today we get to land on one of my favorites of Kelly Clarkson's tours, and that is the All I Ever Wanted tour.
And not only are we going to be talking about the tour in terms of like the set list and where she played and the covers, but we're also going to have a very special guest on, someone who was part of the tour, Rick Robbins, a.k.a. DJ Form. So you'll definitely want to stick around later on in the episode. We're going to be chatting with him.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome to talk with Rick about his contributions to not only the All I Ever Wanted tour, which he was a huge part of, but also a lot of people don't realize he was working with Kelly recently on the new Chemistry record. So we're going to be talking about his contributions to the album out right now as well. So with that said, should we start off and start talking about the tour?
Let's do it.
So the All I Ever Wanted tour was announced July 21st, 2009. And Kelly was actually on tour when they announced the tour. She was actually in the middle of the what's called the Kelly Clarkson Live Summer Tour. A lot of people kind of call it the All I Ever Wanted Summer Tour.
I call it the All I Ever Wanted Fair Tour.
Yeah.
But it's like a separate thing. It's not the official.
Yep.
It's basically like, I feel like it was like they were like warm-up shows, essentially.
Yeah, it was a completely different tour altogether. And so the actual proper All I Ever Wanted tour that played the arenas and the theaters and such all over the world, that didn't start until October 2nd of 2009 in Connecticut. And then it finished on May 8th in Macau in 2010. 31 of the dates were here in the U.S. and Canada, and it wrapped up before the end of 2009 down in New Orleans. So we're going to primarily focus on the U.S. and Canada sort of portion of this tour, but we'll talk a little bit about the part that went overseas as well. Pam, first and foremost, you know, we should talk about the part that's sort of the most unique about this tour, and that was the fact that this tour featured the All I Ever Wanted pre-shows. We're not going to go into great detail about this because we have a whole episode that we did about the All I Ever Wanted pre-shows back in season one of Miss Into Podcast. I believe it's season one, episode 44, if you're keeping track at home. So you can go back and you can listen to that. We talked to a couple of fans who went to the pre-shows and really kind of go in depth on that particular part of the tour. But we'll just say that that was a big portion of the tour. You could buy an additional add-on to your ticket so that you could go to the pre-show prior to the start of the show, hence the name pre-show. And unfortunately, it wasn't in every market.
I didn't have it at mine.
Yeah, no. You didn't have it in New York. So not everybody got to enjoy those because I think they started, if I remember correctly from our conversation, they didn't start until a few shows into the actual tour, right?
Yeah, so the show that I went to was which the New York City show. That was, I believe, the third show of the tour. They didn't start the pre-show until a couple days or weeks later.
Yeah.
So basically, as a very short recap, because as Jeremy said, the episode is already out. We dedicated an entire hour probably to this. It was a small, little, intimate acoustic set that she would do for some fans before the show. She did covers. She did like demos on
unreleased songs,
tracks. So just like a really cool intimate vibe. So some fans recorded some songs, so they are out there.
Yep.
Even though I don't think you're supposed to, but whatever. It was a while ago, so I don't think anyone's coming and taking those down. But it was a really cool thing that I don't think she's had since.
No, she hasn't done anything like that since, and I appreciate almost that she hasn't, because I think it's part of the reason of what made this tour so special. I mean, there were a lot of different things that she had on this tour in particular that she has not brought with her in future tours. So this is one of the reasons why this is one of my favorite tours. Even though I didn't even go to any of the pre-shows, I still appreciate that she offered it to fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Wasn't this also the tour where, I might get this slightly wrong, but I'm pretty sure there was like some like contest. It was like an app where you could like sing into the app. I think it was like Already Gone or something. I might have the song wrong. And basically it was like whoever, for each city, whoever was able to sing like the best in the app, it was like a game, then they won and were able to sing Already Gone at soundcheck with the band.
Yes, you are right. And yeah, I believe the it was done through a company called Smule, which was really big into like singing app games or whatever. And I think it was just a couple of weeks into the game before people figured out how to game the system, because it would score you based on how you were singing.
Yeah.
And people figured out ways to get like either a perfect score or like ridiculously high scores, and it got you, I believe it got you a meet and greet, and you got to do the whole like sound check thing.
Yeah, so that was just another thing that, again, we haven't seen since, but I thought that was such a cool element. I think Mel, who we had on the pre-show episode, I feel like she won that. I might be wrong.
Yeah, Melissa, might have. Melissa was one of the winners of the contest, and yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I think she even told her story in the episode.
Yeah. So that was a fun little tidbit.
And I forgot really cool, about that.
I kind of forgot about it. Like I didn't include it in our outline, but I forgot until we were talking right now. I'm like, oh yeah, that happened. So again, another cool thing that we never saw again. But that's okay. That's what you don't want to have the same opportunities every single tour. That's what makes these so special.
Yeah, and going back to the tour itself, I mean, this was probably, I mean, yes, Kelly, with some of her bigger tours, like the Stronger Tour and the Piece by Piece Tour, you know, she did go around the world and, you know, played shows in other places. But for me, I feel like this is the last really, really big world tour that Kelly Clarkson has really done, because she went all over Europe. She goes to Africa for the first time. She goes to Asia for the first time. She goes to New Zealand. And then she plays in Oceania, so she's playing like Malaysia and the Philippines and Taiwan. I mean, this was a massive tour.
Because like a lot of artists, this is not just Kelly. This is just like a what they do usually to like promote tours, which is so not correct. And I know all of our people outside of North America are going to know exactly what I'm talking about. A lot of artists will like brand themselves as doing like a world tour, and they're just in Europe. And they're just in like a couple of countries. It's not world. It's literally like the North American European tour, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's not world. I get it. Like, I've come from the touring side. I know it's expensive. I know the logistics are hard. So I get why artists can't always literally go around the world. But this was legitimately a world tour, which I admire it.
I particularly love when artists say that they're on a world tour and they just go to the US and Canada.
Right. I'm like, no.
It's kind of like if your airport is called an international airport, you don't actually have any flights that fly to like international countries, but you do have like UPS or FedEx that flies in and out of your airport. And so that's why you get to call your airport international, because you send mail internationally.
What? That's a thing?
That's my city of Des Moines, Iowa. That is the designation. We don't have a single flight that goes out of the country, but we have like FedEx.
Not even like Canada or Mexico?
No.
What?
No, you have to like do a layover somewhere if you want to go out of the country. So because we have like mail that comes internationally into the airport, we can technically call the airport the international airport. Yeah, it's dumb.
Oh my God. The more you know. I know, did not realize this. Jeez. Anyway.
So as far as like the people that joined Kelly on the tour, she had a lot of different opening acts. But again, we're going to primarily focus on just the North American side of the tour.
Just because that's what we were at and that's what we're most familiar with.
Absolutely. And no disrespect to the artists like Cassie Davis, who opened up in Australia, or Sum and Annie, who opened up in Germany. No disrespect to those particular artists, but The ones that opened here in the States and in Canada, they were, in fact, Parachute and Eric Hutchinson. Now, Eric Hutchinson was not originally supposed to be on the tour. It was supposed to be the Veronicas, who, if I'm not mistaken, are they Australian or are they English?
They're Australian. Yeah. I was so excited to see them. It was, oh my God. Like, I still remember, like, I doubt it's on YouTube anymore. Maybe it is. Like, the 30-second, like, tour commercial, like, the promo that they made when the tour was announced. And I remember the Veronicas on there. I was so excited. And I was trying to do some research. I don't remember, but for some reason, they canceled.
Yeah.
They pulled out. For some reason, I thought it was a visa issue, but when I Googled it, that was actually something that was more recent. Mm-hmm. Like some of their band members like couldn't get their like the visas done in time, which, I mean, it happens.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't remember if it was actually discussed why they had to pull out, but they did. So they did not end up doing any of the shows anywhere in the world. So they were replaced by Eric Hutchinson, who would later also do the Piece by Piece tour.
Yep.
I really enjoyed both of them. I thought Parachute and Eric were like a great vibe, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Parachute's definitely more of the like pop rock, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Eric is more like pop, I don't know, soul, funk. I don't know how to explain
yeah,
it.
Yeah, little singer-songwriter thrown in there.
Singer-songwritery. But it all worked. Even if Kelly's set was definitely more like the, at least this tour, a lot of like pop, rock, electronic, it all still worked. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about her. She attracts so many different kinds of people. So I really liked it.
Yeah, I had never heard of Parachute prior to this tour.
I didn't either, but I became a huge fan. Like, I remember like after this, my show, I went like on iTunes and I bought their albums and everything. Like, I was in it.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I love about Kelly's tours, is she always does bring out really great artists to support her. I remember she brought, you'll have to remind me which tour it was, but she brought out Rooney to open one of the tours. Do you remember that one?
That was the Addicted tour.
That's right. Okay. So, and I remember becoming just a big Rooney fan after seeing them as well. And obviously, you know, a lot of Kelly fans became Graham Coulton Band fans after seeing them on the Breakaway tours. But Eric Hutchinson, I knew of prior to seeing him. In fact, I think he and I had met when he was out touring his own record prior to being out on the road with Kelly. And I just knew he was a fun entertainer. He's a funny guy. Just, he loves to have a good time. And it's just a really, really talented musician. So I think he made a really great addition to the tour and really fit in well with like Kelly's audience and was just a great opening act. So yeah, he was an excellent choice.
Yeah. So which shows did you go to for this tour?
I need to double check here. I know for a fact I went to the Milwaukee date, and I also went to New Orleans. And I think that's the only shows I went to.
Okay,
I'm trying to remember if I went to Rosemont or not, but I don't think I did. That would be the one just outside of Chicago.
Yeah. Okay, so I went to the New York one. I've been on record saying this was my least favorite Kelly show, but it has nothing to do with her. Like, the show itself, they did an incredible job. I've definitely mentioned this in the past, but long story short, this tour does not bring, like, warm, fuzzy feelings for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was a teenager, and, like, I wasn't comfortable being in the pit at the time. So I bought a seat, and they sold me a seat, and now on Ticketmaster, they say like obstructed view and you know what you're getting into. They did not do that this time.
Yeah.
And there was a column right in front of my seat, so I couldn't see anything. And I like tried going up to like the front of the balcony, and I wasn't blocking anyone's view, but I had this woman scream at me. And if that happened now, well, first of all, I would have spoken to like the box office being like, I can't sit here, I can't see anything. But regardless, I didn't know how to stick up for myself when I was 16. So I just was like, I think I left crying or something. It just wasn't good vibes all around. But the music was great. The band was great. And this tour has my absolute favorite covers, like as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So I always love watching the videos on YouTube after the fact. So I kind of like try to like remove me being at the actual show from the tour itself.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's my anecdote.
Well, since you brought him up, let's talk about the covers before we go into the actual set list itself, because this tour really brought the covers, you know, where
collectively my favorite group for a single tour.
Hands down. Yeah. And there were, I mean, because there were a lot of covers that were done in the States and in North America, but there were also a lot of them that were just done overseas. But the ones that she did in the States, I think were really, really great. And the funny thing is like every time I talk about like the covers on the All I Ever Wanted tour, I always want to talk about the Rod Stewart cover of Some Guys Have All the Luck that she changed to Some Girls. But then I have to remind myself that was the Summer Fair tour and not
yes.
the other All I Ever Wanted tour.
Are we going to do a Summer Fair episode?
Maybe we might. Will. We might have to do one.
Because that also had the Janet Jackson cover, If.
Yes.
Which that was a fan favorite. Everyone loved that.
Yes.
But that's not this tour.
So. Yes. That's a separate tour altogether, even though it's under the same album-ish umbrella and was promoting the same album. The first one that we have to talk about, obviously, is probably one of, I would say, if we had to put it, definitely top 10, maybe top 5 fan favorite covers, Seven Nation Army by the White Stripes.
Whew. I mean, I hadn't watched this in years, admittedly, so I watched it again this morning. And I forgot how much fun it was. Like, Rick, the DJ Form, he came in with, like, this, which we're going to talk about a little bit in a little while, like, this really cool remix. And then it goes a little something like this. Hit it, and then and it just was, and, like, her voice, like, they did that cool, like, distortion effect to her voice for most of it.
Yep.
Oh, man, it was so cool. Like, I would love to hear that studio. I mean, it's probably never going to happen, but you never know, but... and she had this cool, like, light-up microphone.
Yep.
And she, like, ran around the stage. Like, she bounced around the stage throughout the song. It's one of her best covers.
It really is. It is an absolutely, like, killer cover. And the funny thing is that years later, when the Stronger era comes, Kelly puts out a couple of EPs with the Smokestack Sessions. And a couple of the songs that she covers on this tour actually get proper recorded versions on Smokestack Sessions, except for Seven Nation Army, which I would have loved, like you said, Pam,
right?
Would have loved for her to have recorded a version to put onto the Smokestack Volume 2.
I wonder if it was like, I don't know. I always get so confused with like publishing and like covers. And that's like the one part of my former job that I never really understood. Like, I know you don't need to like necessarily get approval for covers, but then like I don't know how it works, so I wonder if there was some sort of like clearance issue.
I'll say the minute that it goes out on like some sort of official channels, like you know, whether you record it and you put it out for purchase, or I think even if you officially put it out on like YouTube or something, I think you have to start paying royalties.
That's for the songwriting, though, not for the master part. So I don't know.
Right, right. But I don't think that, like, even just covering it in concert, you don't have to pay anything or you don't have to get any permissions.
Concert, you don't. No, concert, you don't. But in terms of the album, so I don't know. It gets a little fuzzy there. Yeah. Regardless, but yes, it should have been on there.
Yeah, but speaking of a song that did make it to the Smokestack Volume 2, and actually the next couple that we're going to talk about, another one that is near and dear to a lot of people's hearts is the mashup of That I Would Be Good by Alanis Morissette and You Somebody by Kings of Leon.
It's so good. And the way that, like, I think Jason, I was watching a video before. I'm pretty sure Jason was the one who kind of arranged this. Mm-hmm. It sounds effortless.
Oh, yeah.
It really does. And it's great because, like, You Somebody, like, that album, I think, the Only by the Night, I think that came out in 2008. So this was 2009. So it was still like You Somebody was all over the radio and everyone was obsessed with it at the time. So it was really cool that it was such a modern song, but she was able to just do a little twist with it and not just do a straight up cover.
Yeah. This is, I mean, like you said, it's genius level of covers, because you would never expect to put these two songs together. They're not tonally the same, but yet with how That I Would Be Good kind of does build to this crescendo, and especially how Jason arranged it and how Kelly arranged it, the fact that it just blends so well to just go right into that chorus of You Somebody, I mean, chef's kiss. It's so good.
And then at the end, it goes back into the Alanis song. So yeah. It's just like a nice little like bookends, I guess.
Yeah.
I didn't know the Alanis song because clearly wasn't like one of her biggest hits, but it
not even a single. Yeah, not even a single.
Lyrically, I love it. It kind of reminds me. It gives me reminds me a little bit of that, like lyrically.
Yeah.
Just a random side thought. But yeah, love this mashup. And this also ended up on Smokestack Volume 2, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, I believe Volume 2.
Well, and the Alanis song is a little bit older because that's off of her supposed former Infatuation Junkie record. And yeah, like I said, not even a single to my knowledge. But I did know the song just because I know the album so well. So it was, like I said, really cool to hear a song that was a few years older paired in with a newer song that, like you said, was on the radio at the time. Just, man, so good. And again, like this is sort of the theme of this particular tour. They haven't really done anything like this since where they've sort of mashed up a couple of really great covers.
No, I mean, the only thing I can think of like immediate, it's a little different, but the Walk Away Uptown Funk cover.
Yeah.
But it's not the same because it's a Kelly song and the cover. So
yeah,
you're right.
It's a special level of skill to be able to do a mashup of two covers.
And live.
Yeah, absolutely. Another song that she went a little further back in the songbook for was a cover of Patsy Cline's Walking After Midnight, which, I mean, come on, Kelly, you know, back to the Idol days. I mean, Kelly sings Patsy Cline about as good, if not better, than anybody else.
This was actually a song that she did on that Fair tour that she also, she continued on. It's so good. I definitely did not know it prior to this, but I love how bare bones it is. It's really just her wailing on it. And it's, oof.
Yeah, it really does give her vocals a chance to shine and is just such a, I mean, the original by Patsy Cline is just so beautiful as it is. And then to just hear Kelly Clarkson sing it was just, I mean, come on. It's just so good.
And we have that studio on Smokestack Volume 2.
Yes.
As well as the next one, which I have to give a special shout out to the next cover. It is called Lies by the Black Keys. And I'm going to admit, not my favorite song by the band, but I love the cover.
Yeah.
So much so that I was like, who is this band? That I did a deep dive and I can confidently say they're like top three favorite bands. Literally have a poster behind me from when I saw them last year. Mm-hmm. This is from their Attack and Release album, I think, which again, it's not my favorite of their albums, but like, I think it's really special when she's able to introduce a new artist to people. I mean, for me, it was new. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm so deep into their catalog that they're one of my favorites. So I really have to thank her for introducing them to me.
Well, this is another case, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but this was also not a single for the Black Keys.
No,
this was just an album track.
Just a random album track. And they were big at the time, don't get me wrong, but like they weren't super, like it wasn't until their album after this, it was the Brothers album, that like Tighten Up came out, and that really got them a little bit more on the mainstream map to my knowledge. So this was like real deep cut, Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a good cover. I mean, I knew who the Black Keys were at the time. I didn't know the song because I was more familiar with their radio hits, but it definitely reintroduced me to go through and like listen to that whole album front to back. And I understand where you're coming from with saying that, you know, Lies is not one of your favorite Black Keys songs. It's in my regular rotation on, you know, my Spotify. So I've come to learn to like the song.
Yeah, I really like it. I just like, you know, El Camino and Turn Blue. Those are two of my favorite albums. But
yeah.
This is not a Black Keys podcast.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Some of the other songs that she did outside of the U.S., she did a cover of a great 80s song by a band called When in Rome. It's called The Promise, which is so good. If you get a chance.
It's so good.
Oh, my gosh. If you get a chance, go look it up on YouTube or something, because it's just, I love this song. And it's funny because I work at an 80s and 90s radio station. And so we play When in Rome. I mean, I don't want to say relatively frequently, but frequently enough that whenever I hear the song, I instantly think of Kelly because I think of her cover of this song, and it's just, I love it so much.
It's one of those covers I always forget exists and I never listen to it. Mm-hmm. But when I see it, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I remember I was just obsessed with this at the time and I would just watch it on YouTube on loop. And I did not know what the song was. I had no clue.
Yeah.
I remember my sister was doing a college radio show at the time. I can't remember if she was doing an 80s show or are they British?
I think so.
I can't remember. She did a couple different shows. They were all different themes. But whatever it was, I requested this song. She's like, I don't know what this is. Why do you want to hear it? I'm like, no reason. But yeah. Oh, man. This is a really, really underrated cover from her.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't know who When in Rome is. The band doesn't, like, you know, turn on any light bulbs above your head. Just saying, you know, The Promise doesn't really maybe spark a memory. But when you hear the song, you're like, oh, my God. Yeah, I know this song. Because it was also, I think it was in a lot of 80s movies as well. So, yeah, great cover. When she was down in Australia, she did a cover of Tonight I Want to Cry by Keith Urban. I got to admit, not super familiar with this song. Like crazy familiar with his whole catalog. I don't want to speak out of turn here without looking and doing the research, but I don't think this is a single either. I think this might be a Keith Urban album track. But again, please forgive me if I'm incorrect because I don't know all of his stuff. And then she also did a Kelly Kylie mashup when she was in Australia and also in Asia. She did Kylie Minogue's Can't Get You Out of My Head, which is just, I mean, come on. She mashed that up with If I Can't Have You. Oh, my God. So good. I wish she would have done this in the States.
Me too. And I kind of had forgotten. I was watching the North America, the other version that they had done. And I forgot that, like, very subtly, Jill and Kate did Sweet Dreams by the Eurythmics in the other version. I, like, completely forgot because it's very short. Mm-hmm. And it sounds great. But the three of them on this version, the Kylie, oof.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing.
So good. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the set list for the show. First of all, I should say, before we get to the set list, let's talk about the players because we have a different sort of band makeup on this tour than what we are currently used to. And this was another one of the times when Kelly pretty much had like one of the biggest bands that she's ever gone out on the road with. Maybe the Meaning of Life tour gets somewhat close to that.
And I think Chemistry did, but aside from these.
So you've got the usuals. You've got Jason as music director and keys. You've got Aben on guitar. And then that's it. Those are the two usuals. Everybody else has since either cycled in and out or have left Kelly's band. You've got Corey Churko, who played guitar. He played violin. He did some background vocals, of course.
He plays everything.
Yes. Of course, he's out on tour and is like the right-hand man to Shania Twain, which I'm really excited because Shania is coming to my city in November, so I'm excited to get to see Corey play.
That's awesome.
And then, Shania just announced a new residency in Vegas at the Bakkt Theater.
Oh, what do you know?
How about that? Our good buddy A&R Peterson on bass and backgrounds. We've got Miles McPherson, on drums. And then we've got our guest on today's podcast, Rick, a.k.a. DJ Form Robbins, on DJ. And then we've got our horn section with Leif Schreyers on trumpet, Justin Carpenter on trombone, Chris Gregg on saxophone. And then we have the dynamic duo of Jill and Kate on background vocals and Jill contributing some guitar as well. I mean, I love the band now. Don't get me wrong. I love the band now. But, I mean, this is also another just really solid band for Kelly to put together. I mean, a lot of these guys like A&R and Miles and Corey had been with her since the Breakaway era. They were like a well-oiled machine at this point. You know, Rick's sort of the new guy as well as the horn section as well. But, I mean, everybody just – it just made for such an incredible full sound that, you know, just, again, made it one of the best tours.
Yeah, and I might be wrong here, but I feel like this may have been the first time that she had a horn section on the road.
To my knowledge, yes, that is correct.
I think so. Might be wrong. Let us know if we're wrong. But to my knowledge, I remember being like very pleasantly surprised that that was a key element on tour.
Not on stage per se, but back in the backgrounds, in the wings, we do have the first credited appearance of a young woman who joined Kelly Clarkson as a production assistant by the name of Trisha Farrow.
Was it really only in 2009? It wasn't prior to that?
At least not credited. You know, I don't see anything from the My December tour. I don't know if she may very well have been PAing on the Summer Fair tour. There was no they didn't do like a book or anything for that tour. So she very well may have been out there, but this is the first time we see Trisha's name brought out as part of the crew, so to speak, helping out with Kelly and the band. So then let's go back to the set list.
The set list is definitely like, there's the core group of songs that they do every night.
Uh-huh.
And then there's definitely some, like, I see your notes here. You have some like stars next to them. I'm like, I know I heard that at my show. I know I definitely did not hear that at my show. So
Yeah. They
kind of changed some of it up a little bit as the tour went on. And as they kind of were like, all right, let's, you know, change it up. Let's make it a little bit different for each night. So
yeah,
we'll note that.
Yeah. So, you know, we start off the show with All I Ever Wanted. And
I loved it. I love this.
Yeah. It's just got everybody and it's like everybody kind of doing this like repeating
layer,
sort of
yeah.
echo. Yeah. Effect. It was so good. I loved it. And then after that, she goes into Miss Independent, followed by I Do Not Hook Up.
Followed by Jeremy's favorite song of all time, Impossible.
This is when I went to the bathroom.
Oh, you.
And then we get the That I Would Be Good, Use Somebody cover, followed by Breakaway, then If I Can't Have You, then we get Never Again, and then we get the Black Keys cover of Lies, followed by Walking After Midnight, so a couple of covers right in a row. And then we get Hazel Eyes into Cry. And then I Want You.
I thought was so much fun.
Yeah.
They did the crowd engagement, interaction, whatever. So they, for anyone who wasn't at the tour or hasn't seen the video, you should look it up. It's really fun.
Yes.
They split the crowd up in half. So at one point, she's like, has one part of the crowd go, I want you, 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 you. And they just keep singing that over and over again. And
uh-huh.
then the other half goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
yeah.
It's just, and then everyone comes together and sings it. It was so much fun. Like, I think she did something similar during the Walk Away Uptown Funk thing on the PCP tour.
Yeah.
I think. So this was the first, to my knowledge, the first time she really kind of got the crowd, like, in unison.
Yeah, kind of doing a little like, you know, repeat after me kind of thing.
Yeah.
The next one is sort of where we have our first deviations in the set list.
Because I don't think I saw this.
No, and this only happened at a couple of different shows where Kelly brought out Eric Hutchinson, again, one of the openers, and they did a cover of Michael Jackson's Rock With You from his Off the Wall album. And it was so fun. Because Eric just, you know, has a great time with it. And the reason why I remember this is because this was near, I think, near the end of the run. Because, like I said, it was only at, like, there was a couple of shows in L.A., or excuse me, not L.A., but California that they did this. They did it in Corpus Christi, Texas. I think they did it in Columbus, Ohio. And then the final show on the U.S. leg in New Orleans. And in the final show, Eric came out in, like, one of Kelly's merch shirts, but it was like a medium. So his like his belly button is showing, and it's like the shirt is like
he was wearing a crop top.
Yeah, it was like 6 inches too short. You know, Kelly's having a good time with him. There's video of it out on YouTube. It's really, really funny. And then they also perform, not with Eric, but they also perform Ready. But this song was left out in a lot of different shows. Like, I remember I didn't get to see Ready in New Orleans, but I saw it in Milwaukee. But
I think I saw it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Rock With You was not in Milwaukee, but it was in New Orleans. So
Yeah. This
is where they kind of were swapping in and out of songs here.
Yeah. After that, we get Because of You. We get Walk Away. We got a little like Breakaway, little, you know, part of the show.
Oh, of course.
Walk Away, we get Since You've Been Gone, and then we get Already Gone. And then we get the encore.
And this is where I am so upset because not everybody got the first song in the encore. And I never saw this because she didn't
actually, Already Gone may, I think Already Gone was beginning of the encore.
Was it?
Reading it now. Yeah.
Okay. This song was performed in several cities, but not the ones that I saw the show.
Same.
Because when I heard that she played it, I was really upset. And that is Sober.
Yep, I didn't see this either. That's when you were like so surprised that I'd only seen Sober once in my life. Yeah, that was 2007. And I'm not counting like the little minute that she did it on the Meaning of Life tour. But yeah.
Yeah.
I literally have seen the song once live.
Yeah. So then we get the sort of the DJ Rick, DJ Form, excuse me, solo into Seven Nation Army, the final cover of the night.
So
which,
good.
I mean, they must have known that this was going to be a killer cover if they put a cover in the encore. And as far as I know, is this the only time she's put a cover in the encore?
In recent memory, that's the only thing I can think of. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the night ends with the big single from All I Ever Wanted, My Life Would Suck Without You.
Yes. There's definitely a couple of like little notes. Like we're not going to list exactly which shows, but Maybe was performed at a couple shows. Shivis was performed at a show. Jeremy, I know you can speak on the next one.
Yeah. When she did the final show in New Orleans, she came out, she did a second, I'm trying to remember if she did this. I think she did it before the, like, My Life Would Suck Without You portion of the encore, but she came out and did I'll Be Home for Christmas, because this was December when the tour wrapped up. And from my knowledge, it was the first time she had ever performed a Christmas song in concert that wasn't part of like a TV special or, you know, something like that. I mean, again, correct me if I'm wrong in our socials, please. But she came out, did I'll Be Home for Christmas, which was, what a wonderful treat that was, because that was the first time that we'd ever seen that. And then, and I don't remember where this showed up in the show, so you'll have to correct me if you were at the last show, she did another cover of I've Never Loved a Man, which is also on one of the Smokestacks.
That's right. That's right.
I believe it's also volume two.
Yep. Some other little anecdotes. In Europe and South Africa, she performed Save You. In Germany and Birmingham, Alabama. Or is it Birmingham, UK?
It could very well have been UK.
Okay, you did not note it. probably, that actually makes a lot more sense. She performed How I Feel. South Africa, she performed Long Shot.
Which is like one of the only ever performances
yeah.
of Long Shot Live.
And then in Johannesburg, she performed, I'm assuming this is the Mark Broussard cover. Is that what you were getting at? She performed Home, which is one of my all-time favorite covers.
I mean.
I know. So good.
Talk about some lucky people.
Yeah. So those are like kind of some notes where like there were like a little deviation. Is that the right word?
Yeah. Those are some of the. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's some of the like, you know, changes that they made.
Changes.
You know, we're not going to go down the list of the sort of the overseas set list. The one thing, though, I will note with the overseas set list is that she did throw in a medley.
Oh, that's so good.
And it was Just Missed the Train, Low, Addicted, and Gone.
Like, what? Yeah. How good is that?
Yeah, honestly. So I'm a little surprised. And she did that in lieu of doing the Patsy Cline cover.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different, like, that's like the general set list. There's always going to be a little slip rules and it's a little fuzzy, but that's the general set list. Like, so solid. It is so solid. And, you know, what we've said and what is true is, you know, unfortunately with a lot of artists, the more into their career they get, obviously the bigger catalogs they have, they still have the same amount of time to perform though. So they're going to have to cut corners a lot, as we saw on... For Chemistry, it's a lot of singles, couple album tracks. And I think what they did for Chemistry, which was really special, is they were able to rotate a lot of the B-side tracks. That's kind of how they were able to keep some of the old legacy stuff in there without leaving too much out. So yeah. it's hard though. But when you're looking back at 2009, she only had been in her, you know, career for what, 7 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
So she was still able to still do a lot of the album tracks.
One of the things I was a little surprised by, but I mean, I guess maybe I'm not surprised. And I think mostly because of the sheer amount of covers that were on this tour, is that the covers pushed out a lot of the opportunities for My December Songs to show up, because you really only had Never Again as the like one really big My December song that got played night after night. Maybe, again, only got played at a couple of shows. You've got Sober that got put into the encore at a couple of shows. So even
though Chivas was performed at one show.
Yeah, and Chivas. So,
and How I Feel. Yeah, so
So like you've got like these little sprinkles of My December, but I mean, it would be different if we were talking about a set list that was in, you know, 2014 or 2020. This is like right after the My December record, and we're still not getting any My December songs really solidly in the set list. And again, there's so many covers that were put into this set list. I'm interested to know, what was the decision to do so many covers? Because now, you know, she sort of found her lane where she does like, you know, a Kelly Oakey cover or two, and that's it. This was like a lot of covers for a tour, and especially for an artist who at the time had four albums under her belt, and she's still doing, you know, 3-4 covers a night.
Right. It's not like it's, you know, the Thankful era and she has to throw in a couple covers just to make time. Regardless, I adore the covers from this tour. There's some of my absolute favorites. So even if that meant getting some of the album tracks out, like I'm fine with it. But I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. Overall, like, so solid. Solid.
Yeah, this was a really, really fun tour, and I try to look at it more as I generally look at it as a sum of all the parts, meaning I look at it with the summer tour attached as well as the sort of the arena tour part of all this. But speaking just for the All I Ever Wanted tour itself, it's a really, really good tour. It's got a really good set list. You know, like Pam said, I'm not terribly mad about the number of covers that were in there, because they kind of became cover classics, if you will. Yeah. You know, ones that fans really, really love. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that so many people got exposed to them. So many people got to see her cover these songs. So in all, I mean, this is a really, really great tour. I would say if I were ranking this, and I know that, you know, down the road someday, and maybe we've already done this because it's been, you know, 4 seasons now of our podcast. I forget what we haven't done. But if we go to like ranking the tours, I would say that All I Ever Wanted is definitely, I mean, she's done more than a dozen tours. It's definitely in my top 5.
Okay.
Maybe like number 4 of, you know, favorite tours.
I don't know where I would rank it. I have to like.
I feel bad because your experience was so bad.
My experience was horrible.
To do with the show.
No, the show was incredible and it just was circumstance, whatever. So I don't know. But if I like take that out and just look at the set list, it would definitely be up there. And it's also hard for me because I didn't go to see her until 5 years into her career.
Yeah.
So I missed out on the first couple tours. So I missed out on the first like 4 or 5 tours.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, great group of songs. I love the new elements that they brought in, having Rick on there, having the horn section on there. And this was definitely a one of a kind tour.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned Rick, because we now want to go from turning our attention to talking about the whole tour itself to talking to a man who was a big part of that tour. We are so excited to welcome into Miss Into Podcast. He was the DJ on the All I Ever Wanted tour. He's also worked with Kelly behind the scenes. We are so glad to welcome to the show Rick Robbins, a.k.a. DJ Form. Hello.
What's up, y'all?
Yo.
Woo! Thanks for joining us today. It's so nice to speak with you, because I remember as a youngin' seeing you 14, 15 years ago, a few years ago, on the All I Ever Wanted tour. And it's so nice that you are still involved in the Kelly world and you're still doing amazing music. And it's just so great to see you and to see you on my Instagram feed. And it's just really great to connect with you finally.
Well, first of all, thanks for making me feel old.
I mean, we all are. We all
We're
are,
all
right?
Older. No, that's great.
Yeah. That's fine. It's good to be here. Yeah.
We definitely want to talk a bit about, you know, everything that went on with the tour and everything. But obviously, you are a multifaceted guy or a multi-talented guy. How did you kind of first get like the bug to get into the music?
Good question. Well, it kind of started in middle school. I was starting to get into a little bit of trouble. We won't go into all of that. My parents basically, all that I was interested in music and hip hop in particular. And the DJing thing was just kind of, for that side of things, was just kind of getting going. So they helped me save up and get some turntables and taught myself how to do all that just to kind of keep me out of trouble a little bit. And it worked for the most part, but that's really when I got started. I just was making mixtapes, learning how to DJ.
You were self-taught?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible.
I mean, back then, showing my age a little bit, there was no YouTube for me to go off.
That's what I was gonna say. Like, that's incredible that you just taught yourself. Like, did you have like a book to go off of, or you just did it by like ear?
Just got in there and did it.
Wow. So, I've got respect for people who can do that.
That's incredible.
Well, it was a long process.
So I'm looking kind of in your background and I'm seeing, you know, you've got like a Fugees record back there. You've got the License to Ill, Beastie Boys record. I mean, who were some of your like influences when you were first kind of learning your craft?
I would say definitely Run DMC, Jam Master Jay as a DJ, Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince. Jazzy Jeff to me is still top DJs out there. Eric B and Rakim were a huge influence on me from just a pure hip hop and production standpoint. Mm-hmm. De La Soul, and then later on, Fugees and stuff like that. So yeah, late 80s, early 90s, when I was a kid and getting into teenage years and stuff like that, then that's really when all of that music just grabbed me. So
that literally sounds like every episode of Yo MTV Raps that I would watch when I was a kid too. I mean, that you basically just read off like a whole hour long show's playlist.
Yes, and I still listen to it all.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah, I love it.
So basically, okay, so you're in middle school, high school, give or take, and you're just kind of like doing this for as like a hobby.
Yep.
When did you realize like, okay, this is actually what I want to be doing like long term for career?
Well, I actually ended up coming to Nashville to go to Belmont.
Oh, nice.
And I honestly, I didn't really know much about Belmont as a music school. I went there to play baseball. Like, that was the only other thing that I was interested in, was I thought I was going to be a pro baseball player. That was it. So went to Belmont, realized at that point it was a music school. So I was like, well, that's great, because that's the other thing I'm interested in. So started taking all kinds of classes there for all kinds of different things, music business related, production, all those things. Got hurt, sophomore-ish year at Belmont, had shoulder surgery. So at that point, it was kind of like, I'm damaged merchandise. It would be a really long road for me to actually even try the minor league thing, working my way up. So at that point, that was probably when I was like, okay, music is the thing that I would rather do if I can't play baseball. So I just threw myself completely into it and learned production, started DJing a lot around Tennessee, different colleges, Vanderbilt, Tennessee State, Belmont, things like that. So yeah, that's probably once I got to Belmont was when I really got into it.
Because both of us come from like a music background, but like, so you knew that like you wanted to do more of the like performer production studio work versus any sort of like business side. Is that correct?
I wanted to do it all. Like at that point, I was like, man, I'm all in. Let's do everything. So, and it's really served me well for the rest of my career that I did go that route, because I learned publishing, I learned copyright law, artist management, all those things, and have used all of them in my career. So if I can recommend things to people, is when you get when you want to go into a certain industry, man, find out about everything about that industry. Even if you think that you want to be super specific in what you're doing, the more you know about the whole thing, the more it's going to serve you later on. So that was my attitude.
Yeah, because like when I went to school, it was a similar thing. I'm like, I know I want to work in the music business in some way. I thought I wanted to do more like video production stuff, and then I ended up doing management for a while. But like, it's the same thing. Like, you just kind of like dip your feet in wherever you can, and you're gonna quickly learn what you don't like, but what you kind of need to know like a surface level, and it'll help you out in the long run. So that's really great to hear. I love that.
That was my path at Belmont.
So looking at sort of like your credits, you know, you got kind of like the first thing I sort of see from you is your work with Grits. Can you talk about how you hooked up?
Yeah, absolutely. So probably senior year at Belmont, somebody introduced me to a guy named Michael Tate, who is he's lead singer now for a band called the Newsboys, a Christian band. And but he was in a band called DC Talk back then. Mm-hmm. One of the other members of DC Talk is a guy named Toby Mack, who's a solo artist now. But at that point, he was starting a record label called Goatee Records. And they had just signed a new hip hop group called Grits. Some mutual friends introduced me to Toby. And then actually, Todd Collins, who played percussion for Kelly in Vegas. He's a few years older than me. I won't say how many years older, but he wouldn't appreciate that. But he actually was helping Toby start Goatee Records at the time. So Todd and Toby actually gave me my start in the music industry. Todd was
nice.
Yeah. Todd was producing the first Grits record, and I'm still at Belmont. You know, I'm still in college, and they brought me in to DJ on a couple songs. And I thought, well, that's all I'll do. I'll just go in, DJ on a couple songs and be done. But I hit it off with the guys in Grits so well that basically they were like, hey, can you come back tomorrow? And can you come back tomorrow and tomorrow? And before you know it, I had co-written like 5 songs on that first album, and was basically pulling really long days. Cause at that point I was in school, I was a lifeguard, and then I would go straight from work or school out to the studio, work as late as I could, go get a couple hours of sleep and go back. And then at that point, once Grits put that album out, I was done at Belmont. And so I just started touring with them. They asked me if I would go out and tour and be their band as the DJ.
Yeah.
So,
man, yeah. That is so cool. And there, I didn't realize like so many like past, present people in the camp have so much back history. That's so
like cool. I've known Jason since like 99 because he was in DC Talk.
Yeah.
Right. I was going to say DC Talk. I know that was Jason as well. Man,
when we were first when we first found out we were going to talk with you, you know, Pam and I obviously do, you know, sort of our deep dive. It should have come as no surprise that you had sort of like this background in sort of like Christian music, because it seems like nearly everybody in Kelly's band, whether it be past or present, has some sort of like feelers or like some sort of past in Christian music. Like, as somebody who was growing up, and again, you're listening to Eric B and Rakim and Run DMC, like, was that like, were you surprised that you were like, oh, I'm gonna go into Christian music and like play here? Like, was that like the path you thought you were gonna head for, or did you think you were gonna go like in a different direction?
Definitely not the path I thought I was going into. Like, in high school, when I was listening to all those other bands that you mentioned, my mom tried to get me to listen to like one of DC Talk's first albums. And I don't know how much you guys and your listeners know about them, but when they first started, they were kind of Christian rap. They started going into the rock and pop side, and that's really where they thrive.
Yeah.
And Toby, he's grown so much. Like, he's an inspiration for any young artist on how to stick with your craft and really develop over years. But yeah, that was definitely not like, my mom tried to get me to listen to them. I was like, there's no way. I'm into NWA and stuff like that. Like, I'm not into Christian rap. But it's crazy that, you know, years later, I worked with them and had no clue that that was even in the plan at the time. Like, it was not on my radar at all.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you met Jason Halbert for the first time. Like you said, he was in DC Talk, which we've heard his sort of origin story as well. Let's kind of fast forward and start talking about, you know, your work with Kelly. What was it? What was the day that, because I'm assuming, I mean, pl- please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that one day Jason Halbert calls you up and says, hey, we have a very special like niche for you in a tour coming up. Like, can you talk about kind of how you and Kelly kind of got hooked up?
Yeah. So initially around 2007, they were getting ready to prep for the first My December tour. And Jason called me and was like, hey, Kelly wants to put a DJ in the band. Obviously you're the first person I thought of. He was like, do you think you can come to LA to rehearse with us? And I was like, book my flight. Let's go.
Yeah.
So I was out there for several weeks. I don't remember exactly how many weeks I was out there, but it was quite a while, 3-4 weeks, putting that tour together. And we even did like a Yahoo Live event and a couple other show things. And then, as you guys know, that tour got canceled.
I had no idea that you were supposed to be on the original My December tour. I mean, that blows my mind.
Yep.
Right. I didn't think a DJ was even going to be on that.
Yeah, it was. We were planning some pretty cool stuff. But I think that honestly, it worked out for the best for what I was able to do with the band, because all I ever wanted really lended itself a lot more towards that.
Yes.
And when they rebooked the My December tour, it just didn't work out for me to go on the, you know, second tour that they booked. So at that point, I kind of thought, well, you know, maybe my time's done. Maybe that was a window that just closed, you know, door that just closed. But then Jason early in 2009 called me back and was like, hey, we're prepping for the new album to tour with that. Kelly wants you to come back out. Actually, at that point, they were all in Nashville. They had all come to Nashville at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So we rehearsed in Nashville for that tour, which was convenient. And then that was it. I was out on the road with them.
Now, you'll have to remind me, because there was two sort of All I Ever Wanted tours. There was like a summer tour where they did a bunch of state fairs. And then there was sort of like the actual proper arena All I Ever Wanted tour. Were you on the summer tour as well?
Yes, actually, that's where I thought it was going to end. Like, they had hired me to do the summer tour.
Oh.
Because he was like, she wants to do something cool and different and bring that element back for this summer tour with these big fairs and all that stuff. And I was like, great, let's do it. So I thought, you know, June through September or October or whatever would be the time frame. But as we got closer, she came to me and was like, hey, I want you to stay on if you can for the whole push for the next tour. And so I ended up staying with them for several years, you know, all through 2011 at least. So,
and you, I mean,
cause did you, I'm assuming you went like overseas, right?
Yep. I did all of that.
I was just about to say, you got to tour all over the world.
Yeah. That was, man, that was so cool. Like, it was something that I would have never done. Like with Grits and DC Talk and stuff, we did, especially with Grits, because we had a song. A lot of people know the song. They don't really know that it's Grits that did it, but there's a song called Ooh Ah, My Life Be Like that kind of did really, really well for us. And so we did a lot of overseas touring, but nothing like with Kelly. Like, we didn't, you know, we went to South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, you know, a ton of countries in Southeast Asia. So that was really, really a high point for me in touring. Like, that tour was actually the best that I've done. So
when you're preparing for the tour, like, one thing I absolutely loved about that tour, you brought such cool elements. It really felt like we were in like a club for that tour. It felt, even though it was in like theaters. So that being said, there's these songs that Kelly's already doing or that are already on her albums. And then is it your vision about how to bring it to life in a new way, or is it a collaborative thing between her and Jason? And you?
I would like to say it was my vision, but I can't do that. I mean, I definitely had my fair share of input, because coming from that world, they relied on my, you know, experience there. But really, you guys know, I mean, everybody in the world knows Jason's a visionary. So, and Kelly had a very specific idea in mind on how she wanted it to go. So my job was basically just to come in and go, okay, here's Kelly's ideas, here's Jason's ideas, how do I help bring those to life? Because that's what I do. And so we worked together. There was a point where Jason and I would work just me and him for on a lot of things and come up with ideas and build new tracks for me to play on turntables. And I did some percussion and some drum pads and things like that. So we just added in as much as we could to make it, you know, really accomplish the vision that Kelly and Jason had. So it was really their vision. I was just brought in to help bring it to life. So
that's fair. And I feel like you also did kind of like a solo, dare I say, that's probably not the right terminology.
Yeah,
that was what it was before. Was it before Seven Nation Army? I think.
Yeah. That was really cool. Like that was one thing where they basically gave me free reign. They were like, okay, Kelly needs, I don't know, 2 minutes. I don't remember how long it was exactly, but she was doing the costume change, and then they wanted to set up Seven Nation Army with her coming out from backstage. And so they were like, do something for 2 minutes. So I was like, okay, well, why don't I just pick some songs that aren't in the set list and then some other popular songs that fit, you know, tempo and tone and pitch wise and all that kind of stuff. And just do a little mega mix kind of thing with some scratching and whatever. And that's how it came out. And then we led right into Seven Nation Army with the drums.
Now, was that different each night, or did you try to sort of play the same every single night?
I had to basically get it the same every night, because on a tour like that, everything's timed out, you know, lights, you know, tracks, everything is timed out really well to give the best show possible for the audience. And so it was my responsibility to basically nail it the same way every night.
No pressure whatsoever.
None.
I got to say, though, I mean, because a lot of people talk about Seven Nation Army. I mean, it's up there with, you know, some of her fans' favorite covers of all time. And you know,
easily one of mine.
A lot of people talk about that cover from that particular tour. Because, I mean, first of all, it's the first time a lot of people saw her cover the song. And I really do think that, like, even your lead up, like your solo, if we will, leading up to the beginning of it, was all part of the greater presentation of that particular track in the set list. And I think that it really made for an awesome experience each and every night, because I got to see several different nights of the tour. It was always like, okay, we knew it by the, you know, third or fourth time that we were seeing it, we knew, okay, Seven Nation Army's coming. DJ Form's doing his thing. Like, it just, it made it so much bigger of an experience to have you there starting it off.
Awesome. Well, then it worked. That was the goal. I appreciate that.
In addition to doing, you know, the tour as well, you also got to sit down and actually you wrote a bunch with Kelly, because we really haven't talked about the fact that you're also a songwriter. Talk about, you know, some of these tracks that you wrote with Kelly.
Yeah, that's a thing where it was so much fun. I hate that none of them have come out yet. I'll never say never.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like we're past that. But like out of all the kind of scraps of ideas and demos and stuff that we kind of went through, Break the Silence, there's a song called Break the Silence and a song called You Don't Know What Lonely's Like. And those two are ones that, man, I really hope everybody gets to hear. I mean, with technology, I feel like some of that might have leaked. But
I was going to say, so like, hear me out. I mean, I didn't leak it. I don't feel bad saying that, but Break the Silence is out there. Someone did break.
Okay.
Rick, it is one of my favorites. Like, it is so good. The production, the lyrics, the melody, like I know it sounds weird to me complimenting a song that I probably should not know exists, but man, it's so freaking good. And I just want to let you know. And I didn't realize that you were part of that until we were doing research for this. So I had to give you your flowers for that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. That's one of those where, you know, you always can hope that maybe it fits, you know. It was a thing where right after that time is when, you know, life got really good for her, a whole new chapter. And so putting out a song like that probably wasn't really in, you know, the vibe of where she was for life, which is totally fine. Like, it was a great experience. She is one of the best songwriters that easily one of the best songwriters that I know. So that was a great experience for me. And so I just chalk it up to that. Like, it was a great experience with a great person and a great team of people, because, you know, other people worked on those songs as well. So it was, it was fun.
Did you like, was that like during like one of the tour? Was that during the tour or was that afterwards?
It was during the tour. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's even better. It's like you're at like summer camp. You're working, but like also you're just like hanging around and just writing when you want, when the inspiration strikes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how does that work when you're out on tour? Like, are you all just kind of kicking around and someone's got a pad of paper or something and somebody goes, you know, I've been working on this idea for a song. Like, do you want to kick around some ideas? Like, how do you just sit down and start writing songs like that with somebody like Kelly?
Well, with her, she's such a genius when it comes to lyrics and melodies that, I mean, basically I just gave her tracks and was like, hey, pick what you like, write to it. And then we'll get together and you can, you know, sing it for me. And cause it, you know, obviously she's not going to record it right away until we fine tune things or whatever. But yeah, she would just write lyrics and melodies and come to me and in the dressing room, sing them and on the bus. And, you know, wherever we were, we would just kick ideas back and forth. But, you know, she develops ideas so completely before she even brings them back. It's just such an easy process with her.
You are not the first person that has told us that she doesn't just come with like a bare bones outline. Like she has the whole song in her head. Cause we heard that from Aben as well. Cause I mean, obviously he and her have written a lot together. And that's sort of the nice thing about doing this podcast is that it is sort of blown out of the water. A lot of the preconceived ideas that I used to have about songwriting, producing, I mean, even going into the studio, because I literally used to think, I used to imagine it would be, you know, the artists and some songwriters all sitting around a table. And it was like, you know, script writers at, you know, in a writer's room at a TV show, just pitching ideas for songs. But it's so much different than that. Much like how, you know, bands don't all get together in one studio and record a song anymore. It's, you know, somebody's in Nashville, someone's in LA, someone's elsewhere, and they all do their parts and just piece it all together. So it's nice to hear you talk about that songwriting process, about how like she came to you after you had given her a track or she had come to you with an idea. And it gives me a more well-rounded idea of really what the songwriting process is all about. Long road to get to the question. Do you know if any of the songs ever got out of like the demo stage?
Yeah, like I've got versions of those two, Break the Silence and the You Don't Know What Lonely's Like. And they are pretty far along. Obviously, if Break the Silence has leaked, then that version is probably out there.
Yeah.
Maybe not the furthest along version that we have.
Right.
But probably one of the more developed versions is out there. But it got, that song got to the point where it was really close to being put on an album. It just didn't quite get to it. And I guess that would have probably been stronger than it would have been on maybe.
Yeah.
Now,
maybe one day you never know. Well, never.
And we know you also, you also wrote on some tunes called I Saw You and Don't Ever Give Up On Me.
Yeah.
Now we don't want to, you know, fast forward too quickly here, but you know, you also did some work on Chemistry as well. And again, you're going to have to, you know, kind of paint the picture. Cause again, you know, you may have not even had a lot of like in-person conversation with Kelly, but you know, obviously you were working with Jason. Was there ever a point knowing kind of what the theme or the elements of Chemistry was going to be like, was there ever like this thing in the back of your mind that was like, I don't know, maybe Break the Silence fits this record, or maybe Don't Ever Give Up On Me fits this record. Like, did that thought ever cross your mind?
I would say yes. for the majority of the songs that I've been a part of, where her life path had led her at that point as she's getting ready and writing that album, my thought process was, man, some of these would fit perfect.
Mm-hmm.
However, I really appreciate how personal and current that album writing is for her. Like she wrote from now experience.
Yeah.
And so I do think that while thematically and tonally some of those songs would have fit, they wouldn't have been as honest to where she is right now.
Because yeah, there were it was they were written from a completely different perspective and different time in your life. Yeah, I get it
for sure. For sure. So I'm not disappointed.
Before we get to your work on Chemistry, there were some other things that, you know, real big fans know your work. You got to kind of flex a little bit on one of Kelly's EPs that she put out around the time of The Stronger. Pam has just popped it out there, the Smokestack Sessions. You got to kind of flex a bit on some remixes for that particular EP. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah. So I had, at the time, actually, Eric Olson, who co-wrote Catch My Breath with Jason and Kelly, he and I were production partners at the time with another guy named Nate. And so we were working on a lot of stuff just outside of that, just our kind of normal stuff. We were doing a lot of film and TV stuff and things. So we had done a remix, and I played it for Jason. And Jason was like, okay, you gotta play this for Kelly in soundcheck. And so, like, over the speakers, just played it. And trying to remember which of the two it was.
It would either be If I Can't Have You or You Love Me.
Oh, it was definitely If I Can't Have You.
Okay.
Yeah, because at that point, You Love Me had not been written yet, I don't think.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's a good point. It hadn't been out yet.
So If I Can't Have You, like that whole like halftime, really hard beat kind of thing. I played that and she was like, oh my gosh, we got to do something with this. And I kind of just forgot about it at that point because this was still early on. Like that, we had done that remix idea, you know, months before. And then Jason came to me and said, hey, we're going to do like kind of a live-ish thing in the studio, record it at a place called the Smokestack, where we've all, like all of us, had worked in this studio before. And he was like, she's got this song, You Love Me, that she wants you guys to remix too. So Jason actually came in the studio with us one night and just kind of gave us the conversation that he and Kelly had had, and then left, and we went to town. And then there are fully studio recorded versions of both of those remixes. But then when we went and did the Smokestack Sessions, we went in and basically we used some of the tracks that Eric, Nate, and I had programmed. And then I did some of them live on turntables, and then the band played their parts. So we kind of did the mixture of the programmed remix and live band for that. And I think it came out even better than the original versions we had.
Yeah.
But I still would love the original versions to get out there at some point. But
because, like, how often, which is never, how often do you ever hear like a like released track that is both live, like live band and lot of remix? I feel like that's not. I feel like you usually get one or the other.
Yeah, especially back then, for sure, it wasn't being done too much. So it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
And I need to pick your brain. Like, how did you think to do If I Can't Have You that, like, slow?
It was...
Because I would have never thought to do that. It sounds incredible.
Yeah, I think for me, being a DJ, I'm always thinking from a remix perspective of how can I redo this song in a way that is different enough that people will notice how like different it is, but it's interesting enough that people don't go, oh man, you know, I don't really want to hear this. Like, even if you still prefer the original, that's great. To me, a remix is how can you take a song and give a completely different spin on it? So,
yeah,
you know, there's so many remixes out today, what they call remixes, where it's basically the same exact track. They just put different people on it with them. Mm-hmm. Yep. To me, that's not a remix. That's just the new version. A remix needs to really change the entire vibe of the song, in my mind.
I agree. Honestly, I feel like a lot of her quote unquote, I'm not counting these, but like a lot of the quote unquote remixes that have been out there are just like, you know, the song with like a beat on it, and it's nothing spectacular. So I've been on record saying I don't love a lot of that. These I don't even think as remixes. I think of the ones that you worked on as like reimagined, which I think is such a a wonderful thing because it's just they're you really transform them. So for me, I don't even think of it as remix. I think it's just like a whole new craft, I guess. Because like You Love Me, I love like the crazy like the drums on it and the beat. Oh, it's so good. Yeah. So good.
Trying to make it a little bit different. So
yeah,
you definitely succeeded.
Good.
Definitely succeeded. Did you also work on Hello? The Hello remix?
We did a version of it. I'm going to be honest. I don't know if that version ever came out. It's been a while. So
because there is a version and I thought it might be you. Actually, I'm going to look in the liner notes right now.
Okay. I don't know if.
I know in the liner notes you are credited on the Hello remix.
You are.
Okay. Then yeah. Yeah. I
would hope so.
I forgot that it was one of those things where we had done so many different versions of even some of the other songs we started dipping into. And so I don't remember. I'll be honest. I don't think I have a copy of that CD.
Well, and good luck. It's hard to find.
I know.
If you want to spend like $200 on it on eBay, go for it. It's very rare. But yeah, it says it on there, and I really, and again, I don't think of these as remixes. I know they are, but I just think that they're kind of in their own, they're in their own lane because they're just that different and unique, and I really appreciate them. Oh. And I'm really glad you did these because she doesn't have much like this in her catalog.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. So I'm glad that you guys like it.
So we fast forward to this current chemistry era, and we find out that when we're reading the liner notes to the new chemistry record, we see a familiar name under the song Red Flag Collector, which, you know, Jason has already been on record saying that it's one of his favorite projects that he's ever worked on. Talk to us about sort of your involvement with that particular tune.
That one was, well, Jason and I, unfortunately, I don't get to talk to any of them as much as I used to when Kelly started doing the show and everybody went to LA. It's just like time and space, you know what
yep.
I mean? So,
yep.
But Jason and I do keep in contact, whether it's like DMs on Instagram or we text every now and then, like most of the time it's him just texting me out of the blue and I'm like, wow. Okay. And that's what happened on this. He texted me, was like, hey, you got some time to work on a song with us? And I was like, absolutely, let's go. And so he kind of explained the vision of the song. And, you know, as everybody knows, like he's such a creative. It like his vision for that song was, again, like with Kelly, so developed that basically he was just like, I need this kind of a thing. I need these kind of sounds. I need this kind of a DJ, scratching and effects and this kind of a loop thing. And he basically described to me what he was thinking and then was like, okay, go do it. And so at that point, I just started experimenting and he sent me the tracks and I just did a whole bunch of ideas and sent them back to him and he was like, this is perfect. And it was it. Like it was that simple. But that was a lot of fun because I knew that what I gave him, he would even take and take it to the next level.
Yeah.
He wouldn't throw it in there and be everything where it was. He would be able to like pick and choose and move things around. And so I'd love to say I had a huge, huge part in that song. I do think that, you know, I added what I added and you can tell if you know what to listen for. But for the most part, that's Jason and Kelly's song. And I was just able to come in and, you know, add a level to it, I think, build a floor to the house of it. But yeah, it is. It's one of the best songs that I've worked on with them. So
it's so incredible to listen to that song after learning more and more about it, because on first listen, we thought, OK, yeah, there's a lot of great stuff going on in this song. And a lot of times, and for Pam and I, you know, we were both in L.A. for the first time that she performed it live. We were more focused just on the lyrics. I mean, we weren't even paying attention to everything else that's going on in the background. And then as we keep listening to the song and, you know, we have conversations with Jason about the song and now talking with you about the song. That song is so deeply layered with so there is, I mean, you almost need to remove Kelly's lyrics to really be able to appreciate everything that's going on in the background of that track.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the coolest things about it is that you listen to it over and over and hear, you know, the listener who, anybody who didn't work on it, obviously we kind of know what's in there, but anybody who didn't work on it can hear new things every time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had friends ask me, well, what exactly did you do? And I'm like, well, so listen to it and anything that you think sounds like maybe a DJ had a part in it. Yes.
Oh, okay. It's something as simple as that.
Yeah. It's like, you know, just anything that you think sounds like that in that song, that's something that I, you know, gave them to work with. So, yeah.
Well, it's so awesome. And it has been so fun to, you know, reminisce about the tour life and catch up with you with everything that you've done from the beginning to present day. Rick, it's just been a real pleasure to talk with you today. And we are so glad that you had some time to join us. And we hope to get a chance to see you and talk with you again down the road.
Awesome. I appreciate it. And definitely follow me if you, I mean, you guys.
Yes. Where can people find you on social media?
I'm on Instagram. You can just search DJ Form and it'll come up and it's a picture of me as a comic book character. That's kind of the thing that I'm excited about now. I'm working on there's an artist named Unsecret that I've done a lot of production stuff with and put out some songs with, and we're working on a comic book right now.
So. That's what? Awesome. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Or probably end of September, early October, we're going to drop a Kickstarter for it and work that. But we've got, man, it's exciting. That's the thing I'm really hype about now. So
that's great. Yeah.
Oh, well, awesome. We can't wait to check that out.
Yeah, please send it to us. Thank you, we'll send it out to everybody.
Okay, awesome.
Thank you so much to Rick for joining us. It was so cool to hear a lot of those behind-the-scenes stories.
Yeah.
Especially stuff that happened a while ago. Like, I didn't know the stories behind them. I didn't know how he even got involved. Of course, Jason, it makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Jason, for bringing him in. And it's cool. You know, it's really special when, you know, even if he hasn't been working with the Kelly crew consistently the last 15 years, it's cool that he's still brought in for certain projects. It's like, it really is. It seems like a big extended family.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's clearly when Jason needs the experience and the skills of a DJ, he's going to go to Rick. I mean, that's his first call. And so, yeah, it's great to know that, you know, Kelly's kind of got him in her back pocket whenever she needs his particular skill set. And I really hope that we hear and see more from him in the future.
Yeah, because seeing his name pop up for Red Flag Collector was like such a nice little nugget.
Yeah, and again, it made us immediately think of the All I Ever Wanted tour days and harken back to an era of a really, really cool tour. So, yeah, thanks again to Rick for joining us today, and thank you for joining us as well. We hope you have enjoyed this walk down memory lane of the All I Ever Wanted tour. Maybe you were there, maybe you weren't even there, but now you maybe feel like you were there. Yes. Definitely go and look up the videos from the All I Ever Wanted tour, because it's really some great stuff that is out there. In the meantime, if you have thoughts about the All I Ever Wanted tour that you want to share, maybe you've got some great stories from your experiences, we would love for you to share them with us.
Yes. As always, you can find us on all the social medias, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, Facebook and Instagram at Miss Into Podcast. And as per usual, if you listen on the Spotify app, please consider leaving us a rating. You can also comment and leave some feedback on our episodes, our individual episodes. And on Apple Podcasts, if you listen there, please consider leaving us a rating and review so that other Kelly fans can find us a lot easier. Next week, I believe we're going to be doing a little first impressions episode to the Chemistry Deluxe album, the yes. brand new tracks that we're getting. Super excited.
Yes.
And I'll also be talking about my experience at the Today Show.
Yes.
So if you are there on Friday, please say hi.
Absolutely.
Because I'd love to meet you.
Until then, we will see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Miss Into Podcast. Miss Into Podcast was written and produced by Jeremy and Pam. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you'll be the first to know when a new podcast is posted. Find us and continue the conversation at Miss Into Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Find more at missintopodcast.com.